This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
All right, folks. It's another Thursday, so time for another edition of Thursday Coast. So lots to talk about. A lot. And we even have a bit of breaking news we'll start with. But as always, the founder of thedailycoast.com, the largest online progressive community, the host of the Ever Popular Podcast, The Brief, and the founder of Civics with a Q, civics.com. He does numbers. He does the numbers, too. We can't wait to hear the latest on that. Marcos Melitzis joins us once again. First of all, buddy, how are you today?
Doing great, Mark. How are you doing?
Just fine. So what I want to do first, we've got a bit of breaking news coming out of North Carolina, or the beginning of breaking news. And any moment now, the news about this news is going to expand. And here we have the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Mark Robinson, being pressured to withdraw from the race, right?
Yeah. Fresh news just literally minutes ago. So Mark, how much have you guys talked about Mark Robinson? Because that guy is a literal Nazi, and somehow landed the Republican nomination for governor, because he's probably the Trumpiest of Trumpy Republicans in North Carolina, and he's just been an absolute disaster for them. In fact, we were just looking it up. The recent poll of North Carolina by this very publication, the Carolina Journal, found that Mark Robinson was at 39% of the vote. He's not even hitting 40%. And so the story basically says that he's being pressured to drop out by both his staff and Donald Trump staff. And because they say there's a story about to be published or broadcast about something to do with him and adult websites in the 2000s. So I don't know. I don't know about that, Mark. I actually think that he is polling at 39%. They want him the heck gone out of there because he's dragging down the ticket. And if you look at the 538 polling composite of North Carolina right now, it's actually on a razor's edge. It is even. In fact, it's what? Trump 47.6, Harris 47.3. Mark, that is within the margin of turnout. It is as close of a race as you can imagine. And the fact that you have a governor that is actually actively repulsing voters is a problem. So I think that's what they're trying to do. I don't know what this adult website thing. Maybe it's a thing that maybe it's like a serious thing. I would sincerely be surprised if it was beyond hypocrisy.
You'd be surprised if it was a serious thing.
I'd be surprised if it was something more than just hypocrisy.
Well, it is hypocrisy. Now, so Marcos, literally, just before we went on live, folks, he shared the story with me, and those of you looking on screen can see the second paragraph. I blew it up. Sources with direct knowledge have spoken with Carolina Journal on the condition of anonymity and said that Robinson is under pressure from staff and members of the Trump campaign to withdraw from the governor's race due to the nature of the story, which they say involves activity on adult websites in the 2000s. I sent that to a person not to be named who's very much knowledgeable about everything campaign wise. And they have replied to me.
Ooh, that was quick.
With very graphic wording about what the story be.
Can you share?
I want to, but I need to be, I'm not up on every
all right.
Sexual term. Before I do that, keep talking while I Google the right term.
So was he a performer? Did he own an adult website? Did he just partake in them? I mean,
this is unconfirmed. This is from the source who has just shared this with me. I've heard of the suffix or the root word. Folks, we're all adults. Kids should be in school today. What I'm about to say, and I know I'm a minister, but we're adults. I just want people to be clear. And the terminology I'm about to use is probably terminology you're going to hear in the media. Okay. We have heard of the term cunnilingus. Now, don't y'all know what that is? This is a unconfirmed, but from a reliable source, analingus.
Okay.
Analingus. So you all look at the root words. I'm sure you can figure that out without me having to spell it out. If you need to look it up, you know, A-N-I-L-I-N-G-U-S. Allegedly, that's what we are dealing with. Now, it is unclear what I'm told, not him in the act, but him posting about it in some forms. That's what I'm told. Unconfirmed.
Is it that, I mean, the context there could be either heterosexual or homosexual. Is there?
Doesn't say.
All right. So, I mean, yeah, I don't kink shame. I do not kink shame. People do their things. But if we're talking about a hypocrisy story, I mean, that looks like where is this landing? I don't know if that's enough to knock out anybody in this day and age of Donald Trump, other than the fact that he's already polling at 39%. And it's a great excuse by panicked Republicans. And we know what that feels like. We were there. We were there with Joe Biden. So they're seeing Joe Biden was losing by 2. Robinson's losing by 12, by a lot of points. And so, and worse than that, he's actually dragging down the Trump ticket. So they may just be using this as a way to drag down, to kick him out. But Mark, we read the story, and the story says that you cannot remove him from the ballot anymore. Ballots have already been printed. So they can replace him, but his name's still on the ballot, which seems kind of pointless almost, right?
Yeah, name on the ballot. And if he drops out, the vote, any votes in his name would go to whomever they would choose as a replacement candidate.
But, I mean, they don't have the money to, what, a big ad campaign saying that's not our guy. the vote for Mark Robinson's a vote for somebody else. Please turn out and vote. I mean, it's they're in a hot mess. But you know what? They deserve it because Mark Robinson is a literal Nazi. And, They are the worst. And so now they reap the rewards, don't they?
Well, and again, it is the hypocrisy. And it is, you say you don't know if there's any shame, but I think that even amongst Trump's base, despite what Mark Robinson thinks he is, what he sees in the mirror to them, he is still a black man.
Yeah.
And we've seen historically when they have these Uncle Tom step out here on their behalf, they will sell them out and cut them off in a minute. The only one to really get away with something like this was Clarence Thomas. But you know, this is a contradiction, and we know about their paradoxes when it comes to some of the evangelical preachers and the freaky kinky. But this man is no good. So we will see what comes. That is the breaking news, even from the Trump campaign, folks, because this porn story. And again, this is not just visiting sites. From what I'm being told, this is him making posts on the subject. So he is posting in it says in forums, in porn forums.
Jesus.
So he's writing.
Who found that? That's some serious opposition research work. I don't even know how you even begin to track that down. Congratulations. Whoever, or maybe condolences, whoever had to track that one down.
And you know, funny, I don't understand people. We don't know what somebody did, but they know what they did. He knows he did that. Trump knows the thing he did.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what gives people the gall sometimes. But I understand this last thing we'll say on this topic. It tracks. You have a black man attacking Dr. Martin Luther King and civil rights and black people running for governor of North Carolina. The GOP latches on to him. They have no common sense because they don't stop and think, you know what? This dude might be crazy because he's a black man trying to appeal to us so much he hates Dr. King. If he doesn't track for them, that he might be a little off in some other areas.
The warning signs were all there. He hasn't been shy about his nuttiness. So it's like, yeah.
What does that do, in your opinion, when it comes to North Carolina or the Harris Waltz? What's it?
Traditional competent Republican gubernatorial campaign would have its own field operation, its own messaging, its own get out the vote operation, getting people excited to turn out and vote. The Democrats have that on their side. So instead of that, you have a basic operation is alienated so many people that in a 50, actually North Carolina is like a 53-47 state, right? 52-48 Republican state. It is a slight lean red state. And somehow he's only getting 39% of the vote in the latest North Carolina poll by this North Carolina publication, so local pollsters. And so it puts the Trump campaign at a disadvantage. And if the Republican Party's in turmoil in North Carolina, that further impacts. And, you know, these kind of effects, Mark, in a national election, they're slight, right? It may be 1 point. Right. But if the race is 50-50, that's 1 point. I mean, if Harris wins North Carolina by 30,000 votes, you could probably directly trace that to Robinson and his shit show of a campaign. So there is clear reason for the Trump campaign to be worried about Robinson. And I suspect, as I think, like, what are they trying to do? I think they think that him being on a campaign trail and opening his mouth is killing him. Like, yeah. Even if they just shut him up, like, there's no hope of winning. They're not going to win the governor's race. Like, that's gone. Nobody's pretending otherwise, I don't think. They just want him off the stage. And I don't even know if that happens if they push him out of the campaign. People like that don't tend to go quietly. But in fact, he might be even more unleashed to be even crazier if he's no longer the actual candidate. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he's already all gone. But I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to shut him up because every time he speaks, he turns off more Republicans and independents in North Carolina. And all the state's going to be decided on the margins. I mean, this is a state that's going to be, I mean, it is as 50-50. It is the most 50-50 state in the country right now, yeah, in the polling. Consistently. We're not talking one poll. We're talking consistent poll after poll after poll is showing that it is on a razor's edge.
You're not going to believe this. So though some of you who follow my personal social media, I haven't talked about it much on the show. I am returned to seminary. I am at seminary now, getting my PhD, and we are live on Facebook. I will have you know, Marcos and audience, that the very first person to comment on this conversation and about what I just shared about Mark Robinson is one of the deans at my seminary.
You're in trouble? Are you getting reprimanded?
No, I'm not in trouble, but well, you know, I said, I don't want folk in seminary. That's why I said I was very careful about how I worded it. I was so that's a little embarrassing. I just started seminary. So this seminary, this is my introduction to some in seminary, Lord have mercy, Mark Robinson. So I guess I have to choose whether I'm going to be a journalist or make a choice, right?
Oh my God, it's so funny.
It is. So that the first person to comment on that. So Quentin Robinson, in fact, thank you, Brother Quentin, from the Urban Theological Institute of United Lutheran Seminary. Lord have mercy. Okay, y'all pray for me. I'm sure I'm good, but it's a little embarrassing. So yeah, we got Mark Robinson. Now, you have done a 3-part series on how Harry can win. So let's get into that.
It's not how she can win. It's the conditions are brewing for a landslide win. Not saying we have that now. I'm saying that we may be seeing a much bigger victory than what the numbers show right now.
Wow.
Nobody likes to hear that, though. People get really wigged out by it because they don't want anybody to get complacent or think we have this in the bag. We do not have this in the bag, everybody. Let's just be very, very clear about that. But actually, it is the conditions are there, certainly forming for something much bigger than what we're seeing right now.
Wow. And so, well, first of all, how much have the numbers changed since we talked last? Because you, the last time we talked, you had us in 251.
Yeah.
Wisconsin in the bag. So what is the update?
Oh, no, not in the bag, but ahead.
Well, I mean.
No.
We were counting.
Yeah.
We were counting them as if they were. We were counting at 251 as if they were there. Gotcha. Right.
So we are now seeing in the public polling, we're seeing a post-debate bounce for Harris. So at the time, a week ago, the polling composite was around +2 Harris. She was about like 49, 47. I haven't checked the last hour, but as of earlier today, every poll conducted in like the last 3 days, so it was like 8 polls in a row, all had Harris up by either 5 or 6 points. So she is seeing a major, major bump. Now, the thing that happens is we've talked about this before. It could be called non-response bias, where Republicans are too depressed after the results of the debate that they're not answering the polls. They're not answering the phone in the same amount of numbers, and Republicans are energized, right? Because we just whooped his ass. So we could be seeing about some of that. So that could come down to earth in the week, you know, in the next week or so. But as of now, I'm not seeing anything come down to earth. I'm seeing Harris expand that lead. And in the 538 polling composite now, she is at, let's see, where's she at right now? She is at like +3. But that includes a lot of polling from before the debate. So like all the recent polling is just, it's gaudy. It's just +4, +5, +6. And she's hitting 50% in a lot of these polls. And so nationally, she's looking fantastic. Now, we all know it's not a national election, right? It's an election of 6 states. 6 states are the ones that matter. And in those states, we are still seeing Harris look good in Michigan and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania polling is all over the place. Either it's tied or she's up by 4 or somewhere in between, depending on the pollster. I would guess, educated guess, that Harris has a narrow lead in Pennsylvania, but it's a narrow lead. And again, we've talked about this before. If Harris wins Pennsylvania, there really is no realistic path to victory for Donald Trump. There's no way he wins Trump wins, loses Pennsylvania and he wins. So he loses Pennsylvania and somehow hobbles enough other states to still pull off the victory. Pennsylvania is, I think, widely regarded as a tipping point state. It's the state that will pretty much decide the election. Now, that assumes Kamala wins with Michigan. It assumes she wins Wisconsin. Those states are safer for her right now than Pennsylvania is. But yeah, I think Pennsylvania is going to be the ballgame.
And folks, so we're looking at, and this is the 538 composite that those of you watching can see on the screen. So that's your argument for the numbers. I want to go back to something you shared with us last week in terms of Florida. I want to just reiterate that to be sure we got that right. You said to us that the Haitian community votes 70% in Florida.
That is what a University of Florida research project determined. The Haitian community's turnouts around 70%, which is higher than almost all groups. Those Miami immigrant groups, they vote. Cubans too, right? Cubans vote Republican at probably similar rates, but yeah, Haitians vote.
Yeah. And that can make a difference, but we're still not at a place where we see Florida really being much in play yet.
No. And the problem with Florida, these numbers are actually from last Saturday. So right now you have Pennsylvania here at Harris 0.5. She's now at Harris is now leading Pennsylvania in the polling composite by 1.4. So she's expanding her lead this week in all of these states. North Carolina remains pretty much, I think it's -2 right now. The problem with Florida is that even if it gets within the margin of turnout, there's no major get out the vote operation by the Harris campaign in Florida. There's one for the Senate race. Obviously, House races have their own get out the vote operations. But it doesn't make sense for Harris to, and it's probably too late now anyway, to build a major, robust get out the vote operation. So if she wins Florida, it's because Trump has utterly collapsed. Like he is just a massive bones because that's not within the margin of turnout. Everything else is within the margin of turnout, Mark. We've talked about that. It's if you're within 3 points in the poll, get out the vote operation is going to decide it. It's who turns out their voters better, get them right now registered to vote, and then turns them out better than the other side. And this is one reason I'm extremely, extremely optimistic about bigger numbers than we're seeing here, because Trump still does not have a get out the vote operation in most of these states. And in fact, I just saw a story yesterday from one of the Arizona newspapers that the Trump campaign just fired their get out the vote contractor yesterday. And they're going to start from scratch. So I got to find a new contractor, they got to hire new people to do all the canvassing and knocking on doors. Mark, we're like under 50 days. And they literally do not have a get out the vote operation in Arizona right now. And it's the same in most of these states because it was the first thing they fired when they took over the DNC. They fired the entire get out the vote team. They fired the get out the vote team and they fired the communities of color minority outreach teams. That's what they got rid of.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So here's the 538 for Pennsylvania as of today, folks. And it's at 48.2 for Harris, 46.8 for Trump.
So look at this. So you look at that and you go, okay, it's a 1.4 point lead. That's not a big lead, right? Like, again, this is within the margin of turnout. But look at where Harris is. She's at 48.2. What does she need to do to... If she gets to 50, that's a ball game, right? There's nothing Trump can do at that point. She is so close to getting to that 50% mark. And again, this is polling. This doesn't guarantee that she wins, but he's got a lot further to go to get to a winning majority than she does. And sort of that's the big difference heading in is the closer you get to 50, the better shape you are. And so we've seen that nationally, Trump is maxed out at 46%. He can't get to 47%. He just cannot. He's never gotten there. And it's interesting. You see it in a lot of these battleground states. That's where Trump is. Even in these battleground states, he's hovering in that 46, in those 46s. It's a tough place for him to be. And he does nothing to build his support. He's doing everything to alienate support. And we've talked about it before, Mark. The one swing demographic are college-educated suburban white women. They're looking at the Haitian racist thing and they're horrified. Like there's nothing there for them to make them think, yeah, okay, maybe we'll swing back to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance this cycle. So they are the numbers are looking good for Kamala. They're not dispositive. I just want to be very clear. Nothing in those polls says she's going to win, right? But we like being ahead. We didn't like being behind. It wasn't that long ago. So nobody come to me and say, we got to act like we're 10 points down. Because you know what? We were 2 points down and everybody lost their head, right? Everybody was in panic mode. So no, we're not going to pretend we're 10 points down. We're not going to pretend we're in 2 points down. We're going to look at the numbers. We're going to see the reality is we're up by 1 or 2 points in these battleground states. It means we got to work hard to close the deal. That's what it means.
So here we are in Michigan, folks, and that looks pretty good. The margin of error is what? 2%, 3%? What is the margin?
It's an aggregate, so it's quite fungible. Couple points. But margin of error is just understand. So the problem with margin of error is that people let's say it's 3, right? 3%. People think it's the same as subtracting 3 and adding 3 to the numbers. And it doesn't work that way. It's a little more complicated than that. But so what I would say with this is just, again, look at where Trump is, 46. That's like this magic number for Trump, right? 46. He's always stuck in the 46s. Harris is that much closer to 50. And it's still within the margin of turnout. 3 points, margin of turnout. If you get a consistent 4-point lead, you're starting to get out of that margin of turnout. 3 points, you're within the margin of turnout. So people are going to work hard. But I know, Mark, I know people in Michigan, they're working their butts off. Michigan is definitely a state where I am very confident in our ground game. And I don't know if Republicans have anything going there yet.
So right now in Georgia, too. So Trump still has a lead in Georgia, according to this composite. Yep. But it's close. It's very, very close.
Yeah. Yeah. The polling is, it's kind of all over. You see polls with Harris up 2, polls with Trump up 2, and then sort of just averages out. That's what the composites are. Within the margin of turnout, Mark. Anything within 3 points is within the margin of turnout. Now, it's better when we're ahead, but you know what? It's within the margin of turnout. And problem that Trump has is that he does not have a real get out the vote operation, right? So we can gain a couple points just on our turnout because Republicans are doing nothing to offset our get out the vote operations. Meanwhile, Trump is golfing. I mean, you know, we talked about a second assassination attempt. Like, what's he doing golfing 50 days from the election?
Yeah.
He's got 3 events this week, Mark. He had one in New York yesterday. I don't know why he's in New York. He's got one in D.C. He's got one in Indiana. Oh, he's got a fourth. So he's got one event in North Carolina. Only swings Indiana, D.C., New York. What's he doing, Mark? Is he running for president or is he what? Like, it makes no
sense. Yeah, I understand. What's he doing in D.C. today? Like, what in the world?
Yeah.
It's in D.C. for you.
Yeah, what's in D.C.? And then J.D. Vance is answering people on angry tweets on Twitter. Like he's not even, I don't know, he's got too much time on his hand. Like I forbid he's actually out campaigning. So it's a very bizarre situation where the campaign's just not firing. They have no message. They are being swamped in money and enthusiasm. They are behind in the polls. Arizona's what? Yeah, Arizona's tied. Within one, it's a tied race. Because the polls can't differentiate between, so 50-50, just like North Carolina, it's a 50-50.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And so how does Trump rebuild his support? So what he's doing is he's trying to appeal to racism, right? That's his go-to. So he's going after Haitian immigrants. And Mark, in civics polling, I hate to say it, but Trump's favorabilities with white voters has gone up. Since the Haiti thing, they like it. They like it. So I can give you the link if you want to share it on the screen, because it's actually, so this is one of our public polls on civics. And then I'm just going to select white. And then I'm going to select the last 3 months. So let's do 6 months. All right, so where are you? You're here. So there's a link to the graph.
Okay, you can pull it up. Let's see. So this is
Trump favorabilities among white people from Civics, which is my polling firm.
Trump favorability amongst white voters.
So you can see that as recently as June, white voters were more negative towards Trump than they were positive. And look at the numbers are going up.
So here is June.
Yep.
That's guilty and hush money. Goes up. It goes from 48 to 50 after the assassination attempt. And so now today it's at 50 still. It's right at 50.
Yeah, and you saw that there's a little bit of tightening, and then it opens up again in the last couple of weeks with the Haiti stuff. So
yeah.
It's you know, when everybody says, "Oh, why is Donald Trump still competitive? Why is still a thing?" It's white voters, right? Here you go, white voters. And so that's what they're going to go to. And that's really his only play at this point, is to try to rev up this white, aggrieved, nihilistic base to hopefully turn out in bigger numbers. Problem is, Mark, I'm seeing brown communities even more activated by it. So it's a zero-sum game, right? He either has to eat into the Democratic support amongst communities of color, or he has to grow his percentage of the white vote. And he's definitely not gaining support amongst black and brown communities or Asian communities. Like, he's not building support amongst communities of color. So he has to grow the white vote. But I have a story coming out later today. The percentage of white voters every 4 years has consistently gone down 1 or 2 points every 4 years. Just because there's less of them. There's more of us, less of them. And that's sort of a nice steady pace. So even if he kept his numbers from 2020, like, he'll lose even bigger, because there's going to be less white voters in the electorate compared to black, brown, Asian, and other voters of color. So,
and that's going to continue to happen as the demographics change.
Yeah, that's going to keep going for a long time. I mean, at some point, maybe things will change, but that ain't changing anytime soon. So yeah, you're going to need a Republican Party. So if things turn out the way I think they're going to turn out, Kamala Harris wins, and wins convincingly, resoundingly, you're going to have a situation where the Republican Party is going to have to come to terms with how they're going to be able to speak to communities of color, because otherwise they're obsolete. They're literally, I mean, they'll be the party of Wyoming and Iowa, but congratulations. That's only going to get you so far.
Yeah. How Harris could win big, three-part series. Check it out. Before we go, we got a little bit of breaking news. This is I think some people would call it, someone sent it to me and said, this is actually a killer tweet. Travis Akers tweeted in response to the GOP story about Mark Robinson's, because, you know, they can't get fired North Carolina GOP. You have to get Robinson to third term. Sorry. Marcos, dailycoast.com. Check out everything there. Check out the polling. Check out how Harris could win big. Check out his series there. And as always, buddy, we thank you for joining us this week.
Appreciate you. Catch you next week.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, ahead of the president's speech to the Economic Club of Washington, D.C. today, there was an on-the-record press briefing on the economy led by White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients and National Economic Advisor Lael Brainard. We're going to hear that on-the-record call from yesterday, announcing some pretty significant news for the economy as we head into the November elections. First, here again, White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients, followed by National Economic Advisor Lael Brainard.
Hey, hi, everybody. President Biden is going to speak to a new milestone. Inflation and interest rates are falling. At the same time, employment, wages, and GDP are rising. I want to be really clear. This is not meant to be a declaration of victory. It's meant to be a declaration of progress, significant progress. The president believes it's important to mark this moment for the country by laying out how far we've come while also outlining the work we still have to do. From day one of this administration, there have been three pillars to the president's economic playbook. First, the president delivered a historic response to a historic crisis. When we came into office, we faced a once-in-a-generation pandemic and an unprecedented shutdown in the economy, and there really was no plan or path forward. In less than 2 months, the president devised and led a strategy and negotiated the most significant recovery package in decades, the American Rescue Plan, which delivered shots in arms, provided direct payments to families and businesses, prevented a wave of evictions, and revved up job creation. Second, the president acted quickly to address global inflation. As inflation increased around the world, caused by the pandemic, primarily broken supply chains and Russia's war against Ukraine, President Biden took on the roots of the challenge. He worked with the private sector to untangle snarled supply chains, getting goods back on shelves again. The president coordinated with allies and partners to address food and energy prices as a result of Putin's decision to invade Ukraine, including historic releases of oil reserves to stabilize global energy markets. The president has always respected the Federal Reserve's independence to bring down inflation. That's a stark contrast to his predecessor. And, you know, bottom line, this was a time that many economists predicted a recession was necessary to bring down inflation. And I think that the approach has proved them wrong, with a record 16 million jobs created, historic job creation for Black and brown workers, and workers receiving higher paychecks now than they did pre-pandemic. Third, the president has really written a new economic playbook for the country that invests in all of America, all parts of America, red and blue, and all Americans. And that's going to have an impact for decades to come. The central piece here is to export American products, not American jobs, and create good paying jobs right here at home. So the president threw out the old economic playbook of exporting American jobs, importing foreign products. And in less than 4 years, the president has led, working with Congress, legislation to be passed that results in the biggest bipartisan investment in infrastructure ever, investing in our roads, bridges, ports, trains, and so much else. The largest climate investment in history, creating American jobs, driving clean energy, a clean energy revolution across the country, with America leading the world in clean energy. Tens of billions of dollars to build new ship factories, reversing America's decades-long reliance on foreign countries for chips manufacturing. And after a half century of failed attempts negotiating with Medicare to lower prescription drug bills and capping insulin at $35 per month and prescription drug costs at $2,000 per year for seniors. So in closing, I want to talk about the work ahead. The president knows this is no time for a victory lap, which is why he will talk about the work ahead. Every single day, the president and vice president push on what more can be done to make the economy stronger, create more jobs, and importantly, lower costs. The president will lay out how we build on the progress that we've made across these 3.5 years and what's at stake as we move into this new phase of the economy. As I said, the president and vice president want to lower housing costs, grocery prices, and make child care more affordable. So again, focused on lowering costs. The president and vice president want to keep investing in all of America and all Americans and communities left behind, from Milwaukee to Scranton, from red cities and states to blue cities and states across the country. The president and vice president want to keep America the safest and most secure nation to invest, maintaining rule of law in our democracy. We all know, and business people know, and other leaders across the country, that our economic dynamism depends on it and makes us the envy of the world. So I think it's really important what some of us can take for granted, to take for granted at times, that maintaining who we are, rule of law and democracy, make America the envy of the world and where people want to invest. So make sure you tune in tomorrow afternoon, early afternoon, to hear the president speak to this in more detail. And with that, I will turn it over to Lael. Lael.
Well, thank you, Jeff. And thanks to all of you for joining us this afternoon. The president's speech marks an important milestone. Today's actions send a clear signal that inflation has come back down, interest rates are coming down, and the focus now is on sustaining the important gains on employment and incomes. Inflation has fallen 95% of the way back to target, and it is now at the same level as the month before the pandemic began. Now, interest rates are following inflation down as well, lowering costs for American consumers. Americans have been through a lot, and the declines in interest rates and in inflation will provide relief by making things more affordable, from refinancing a home to buying a car. The price of gasoline has fallen close to $3 a gallon, below $3 in many states, and is at the lowest level we've seen in nearly 3 years. Prices are down over the last several years for purchases like cars and appliances and electronics. Food prices are down over the last year in areas like potatoes and chicken breasts, and grocery prices overall are barely growing. Wages are higher than they were before the pandemic after accounting for inflation, so working families have more purchasing power. Now mortgage rates are moving down. The mortgage rate reductions we've already seen will save the average new home buyer $5,000 a year. And those savings will increase as mortgage rates come down further. In addition, refinancing applications are at their highest level in 2 years, which will help provide relief for existing home borrowers. For the average new car buyer, a 1 percentage point decline in the interest rate will save up to nearly $1,100 on the life of the loan. The president will note this hard-won progress, but emphasize that we must continue to work together to tackle longstanding affordability challenges for middle-class families. America needs more housing. That's why it's critical to move forward on ambitious plans to bring housing costs down by building millions of new affordable homes and providing incentives for states and localities to remove outdated obstacles to building. It's essential we continue to enable more workers to participate in the labor force and to make it easier and more affordable to raise a family. Investing in children improves both their well-being and their future employment opportunities, and supporting childcare expands access to better employment opportunities for parents of young children. That's why it's critical to move forward on expanding the child tax credit and ensuring childcare is affordable and accessible. We have the highest employment rates for working-age people in decades and the highest on record for women. We've seen continued strong growth, with our economy growing faster than our comparable countries, and it's even higher than forecasts from before the pandemic. The declines in inflation and interest rates are welcome, but no one's declaring victory. The focus now has to be on sustaining the gains we've seen for middle-class families, workers, and small businesses, while continuing to address those long-standing affordability challenges in areas such as housing, healthcare, and raising children.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.